Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you another episode of Sword and Sandal Cinema. But first, a quick legend of Hercules. In 1986, a compilation of Hercules' amazing adventures in our nation was published by Penguin Books with a warning that it wasn't one of their classic titles. The chronicler, Mark Marek, had previously sold these tales to such venerable venues as High Times and the National Lampoon. Marek's frenetically drawn comic strips, detailed maps, colorful paintings, and wise commentary lay bare the brave soul of Greece's greatest hero as he wends his way through the American bizarro land. Marek's Hercules is one part Euripides and two parts peplum. I'm a very big fan of both. Hercules battles a giant flying moose, that was hard to say, harrows a bleak carnival underworld, topples heavy metal gods, and tackles beefy football players. He triumphs in his 348th labor and his 349th labor, and chastises modern religious leaders who doubt the reality of the gods. Hercules finds love, lust, lost treasures, heroic quests galore, and even a chance to atone for recent misdeeds in the pages of this book. As if this wasn't enough, and I've only scratched the surface of the tales, there's even a four-star guide to Greek restaurants authored by Hercules himself. How can anyone possibly top that? Hercules amongst North Americans is, alas, long out of print and quite difficult to locate. Its bold originality and quirky humor, laden with social commentary through anachronism, make this quest to locate one copy a worthy and worthwhile pursuit. For those who wish to take me up on that quest, happy hunting. And now for Sword and Sandal Cinema with Michael Del Russi. Greetings and welcome, Michael. How are you, my friend?
Great to be here with you. And thank you for having me.
It's great that you're here. I always look forward to our conversations. I'm glad we're doing two shows together, and I'm looking forward to the day we do a third show together.
I'm fascinated by what you just described. I knew nothing of this publication. Was this a comic? Was this in comic book form, or was this a printed novel? Can you elaborate on that for us?
Sure. It was originally a set of like comics in, that he published in like National Lampoon and other like fringe periodicals. And then it came out as an oversized paperback collection. I have it in the oversized paperback collection. And I looked on Amazon today to get a copy that's not in the best condition is like $150. So it is hard to find.
Wow.
And I had an opportunity to pick up some inexpensively like two decades ago, but I regret not having done so. But anyway, we can't change the past, alas. But it's social commentary, and it's very well done, very witty, and I always enjoy reading it. I try to read it every couple of years or so.
Well, that's quite imaginative. The content certainly is imaginative and progressive in so many ways.
And, they have Hercules questing through like a modern landscape. And I think his 348th labor was being a switchboard operator.
That's fascinating. That's definitely fascinating. You know, I was thinking today, meditating on the influence that Sword and Sandal Cinema has had on my life and what a powerful influence it has been. I think we can all agree that the 60s were the golden age of Sword and Sandal Cinema.
Yes, definitely.
That's where it all happened. That's where it all happened. But I was thinking back to, I think it was probably, pretty sure it was 1981. Just to segue a bit, and I remember a fellow worker had dropped me off up on the parkway going home, and I was just gone through my divorce. And of course, as everyone knows, divorce can be quite traumatic, especially when there's children involved. And I'm walking along the railroad tracks. I think I was about, pretty sure I was in my early 30s. And what was I thinking about? You know, I was thinking about everything that has taken place, and I needed support. I needed support spiritually. I needed support psychologically on many levels. But what comes to my mind as I'm walking down the railroad tracks headed for home in the dark? I'm thinking of Sword and Sandal Cinema and the heroes that had supported me all of those many, many years and the challenges I faced from my teens onward. And it just goes to show once again what a powerful influence they had. And even through those traumatic times in my adult years, it was our Sword and Sandal heroes that pulled me through. There was something that took place in my spirit, something that took place in my mind that provided a place of escape, and that's the title of my presentation tonight. It was a place of escape, a place of fantasy, a place of wellness, a place of challenges in a good way. It took us to that mythical mountain, if you will, and that's where my retreat was. That's where my retreat was, of course, notwithstanding our spiritual beliefs, and we all have varied spiritual beliefs and concepts that we might adhere to, and those may even change over the years. The one thing that didn't change for me was my love and the support that Sword and Sandal Cinema gave to me, mind, body, and spirit. And I think when the tribulations and anxieties of our life befall us, I think besides, again, our spiritual retreats, we have the heroes and gods of the Sword and Sandal epics to run to. I know when I'm experiencing a feeling of fear and uncertainty about life, I can just say thinking about some of my favorite films of that time bring me a sense of rescue, bring me a sense of escape in a good way, a creative escape. And I think there's also a sense of calm that comes along with it. You can rest in your heroes of that era. You can rest in your heroes of the swords and cinema epics. And they were epics. I know of nothing in the history of film that had the impact, a series of films that had the impact that Sword and Sandal did. I guess the only thing you might be able to compare to it were the Westerns of the 50s, which had an early influence. But even there, the full impact of who you are, what you can be, there was no relation. There was no relation. You couldn't even relate those films to the what Sword and Sandal Cinema had brought to us. So I think even some of my favorite Brad Harris films, namely The Fury of Hercules, Goliath Against the Giants, I would still, in my later adult years, get excited just thinking about these films. Mark Forrest and The Son of Samson, what I thought was an outstanding production. Also, very imaginative was Goliath Against and the Dragon, Goliath and the Dragon.
I remember that.
I think that was another Mark Forrest standout. I think Broderick Crawford was in that film. I don't know if you remember him. He was an actor in the 50s. He played in a series called Highway Patrol. And lo and behold, remember that?
Yes, and I remember Highway Patrol.
Yeah, and I'm watching Goliath and the Dragon. There he is. He was an evil emperor, if you will, at the time. I think they forget the exact title of the role, character, and role he played. But then we had another standout for me was Mole Men Against the Sons of Hercules.
Yes,
and I always loved the end of that film, when Mark Forrest puts his hands in the air and blesses the civilization at that time. He raises his arms to the gods, if you will. These scenes just added, even today, here I am, many, many years, 70 decades, if you will, into my life. And these scenes just stay with me. And I know that the peace and strength that they give me even today, nothing else can be compared to it. Of course, we had Steve Reeves, And so on some of those days, looking at some of the sword and sandal posters even, the hero within would be awakened for me. And for me, I could honestly say if I'm able to slay the dragons on any given day because of the sword and sandal influences in my life. And even as far as, you get to the point, I think, on certain days when there's challenges, when you can conquer the barbarians and the mythical dragons of your mind that protect the gates and guard your spirit. There's a certain peace and serenity that also I have discovered comes along with meditating on my sword and sandal heroes. I can speak with complete candidness. From the age of 16 onward, sword and sandal heroes have stood at the gates of my spirit, protecting the essence of my mind and my heart. I will never abandon my heroes, and I will never abandon that masterful decade of the 60s where it all took place. The gods descended to earth in this decade of the 60s. The gods came to us in the decades of the 60s. They came to us in the form of sword and sandal cinema.
I believe that as well, because I grew up with the Greek mythology and with the Peplum films and the Hercules cartoon reinforcing them, and then the Sons of Hercules TV show as well. Mm-hmm. And with Sons of Hercules, even though I count myself a descendant of Hercules, because he spent a lot of time on Lemnos, which is where my descent comes from, the spirit of the show was that there were the blood children of Hercules, but also there were the sons of Hercules in spirit. And some of them even lived before Hercules, like in the Stone Age. So I love that concept that anybody could be a son of Hercules, or a descendant of Hercules, or of the tribe of Hercules if they wanted. And that helped mold me and who I am. I remember when I used to teach in college years ago, I said something about that in the speech, and then they paid me to give that speech over and over again. And it was pretty good. I got like $75 a pop for talking for like 20 minutes, which back in the day, that was like phenomenally good, to get that
amount. Not bad, not bad at all.
And I would say that, I wanted to be like the Hercules in the movies, or one of the sons of Hercules. And I couldn't figure out a way to do it initially. I didn't want to become a mercenary going out and hurting people or things. I decided to tackle the monsters that were plaguing our society, the tyrannies of the day and the monsters of the day. And that's what inspired me to get into the human services, where I can confront these injustices directly and try to affect some much needed change. And the message of the Hercules movies, the same as with the Westerns and even the Kung Fu Oriental movies that were very popular during the day, was that the individual is more powerful than the society that surrounds them. And that if the society is unjust, the individual can face that society and stare it down, or make needed changes that will benefit the people. That message, kept coming up over and over and over again in all of these genres of film. But being Greek and having been born when I was, it was the sword and sandal epics that motivated me the most. That's where I was more receptive to the message. And it also supported, like individuality and unique creative self-expression in a variety of ways, in that these muscle men heroes were very different than the people around them. They lived by a different set of rules. They marched to the beat of a different drum. And when you're in a society that's pushing conformity, having an example of nonconformity and how powerful that could be, that also powerfully influenced me. And I still find, as I try to get people interested in my Age of Heroes initiatives, that there are enough of us still around who grew up with those films that always wanted those films to be true. They wanted to be with Jason on the Argo. They wanted to be with Theseus as he faced the Minotaur. They wanted to be on Hercules, with Hercules on one of his labors. So we could still do that. I mean, you know, we're the new age of heroes. And that was our mythology, the Peplum films, guiding us along the way.
Absolutely, and I think what they generated was the spirit of the internal champion within all of us. I think it opened up the door to make us realize, I think, we're all sons and daughters of the gods in many ways. And I think those films also inspired that, but I think what you just described was incredibly inspiring experiences there. And being Greek, of course, there's a special feeling and a special gift, if you will, in your spirit, being Greek and being more closely aligned, if you will, with the mythologies and the heroes and everything that comes along with it. But I think this inspiring the internal champion and the individuality within us, which is what Sword and Cinema did, is especially important because we live in this society specifically, where sometimes our individual callings, if you will, can be diluted or ignored or even disregarded. I mean, you know, in a society where, monetary gain and capital influence, if you will, and profit and loss, unfortunately, seems to be the order of the day and at the list of priorities. The sword and sandal vehicle enhanced the growth of our individuality, enhanced the importance of what we can be as champions, as warriors in our own lives, and help us to move forward in a very magical way, a very magical way. So I think it's wonderful the way you described it. And your teaching experience as well, and how everything you did, or everything you were inspired to do, was moved forward by Sword and Sandal Cinema, and the Greek heroes and the gods and the warriors and that everything that came with it. That influence was the vehicle for everything you did, and your own growth, and your own spirit of championship dreams, if you will, in your own life. So I just think that there's nothing to compare. There's nothing to compare with being exposed to the myths, the heroes, the stories, the gods, the warriors of that era. There's nothing to compare, and I would defy anyone to prove me wrong on that level. The Sword and Sandal Cinema, and I hope as decades go by, there will be an increasing level of focus and importance placed on these magnificent films.
Well, what we're doing together, these shows and also on Facebook, the groups, the Sword and Sandal Cinema groups have around 30,000 people, if you added up all the people in the different groups, and there's very little overlap between the groups. So that's a sizable number of people throughout the globe, and we have people in Russia, we have people in the Middle East, we have people, all over the planet who belong to these groups and who discovered these movies, some when they originally aired and others, on television or some other form, but these movies continue to attract people's attention. They continue to inspire, and people want to be adventurers. They want to make a difference in the world. They want to be remembered. And you're right. In these shows, the mythical figures that were talked about in books or in drawings or paintings, they came to life in the form of men and women who looked like the gods of old and who performed great deeds and had mighty adventures like the gods and heroes of old. And we got to see that it was possible. And that bridged us with Olympus, and it created something very powerful inside of us, and it was very effective, as you said.
Well, I think that's true, and I, you know, I think it's the myths. These myths tend to live within us, and they strengthen us, and these heroes strengthen us, and that's why, for me, when life becomes overwhelming, I run to the imaginary Mount Olympus within my own mind, and I run to the gods, and I visualize what some of my heroes of those films did at that time. And it's very interesting because they can move in and out of your consciousness as you're going through everyday life here in 2023 and actually strengthen you. You know,
yeah.
They can actually provide a certain strength within your spirit, these heroes. And that's why I say escaping to our sword and sandal heroes, if you will, and stories and visions and what the challenges they face can actually strengthen our own spirits here in 2023. I really do believe that. The imagery and the heroes of these films were absolutely incredible, and all of the actors. And, of course, that's not even beginning to touch upon the influence that they had upon us as far as our own physical well-being. And the interest there in terms of building our bodies and building our physical strength. And we're not even discussing that. It is another major aspect and positive influence, encompassing our lives, if you will.
Oh, most certainly. And that's what the whole Herculean Physique series that we're doing is all about. We were inspired, as were many others, not only to live heroic and adventurous lives to the best of our abilities, but the physique, the classic bodybuilding physique, is something we strove for too. And it encouraged us to get into exercise, to get into nutrition, to get into, generating energy. And thank you again for that key course that you sent me. I'll be starting that very soon, as soon as I finish my Charles Atlas cycle and my muscle control cycle. That's the next adventure that I'm going to start in terms of physical culture.
Well, I'm excited. I'm excited to hear that. Maybe we can go through it together, because
that'd be awesome.
I think that's a real masterpiece in that area, and his teachings are amazing. He is quite an amazing man, quite an amazing guy, and he was the real deal when it came to the power of chi, prana, and the course is very informative, even in terms of supplements. It goes in depth with your basic supplements to maintain your overall health on a day-to-day basis. But it's the power of chi that he focuses on. And yes, I'd like to go through the course with you. I think it would be exciting.
That'd be great. We can start it sometime, like either in late March or early April. By then I should be finished with the two courses that I'm currently on.
Wonderful. And I think listeners will definitely be able to glean a lot of valuable information in terms of the internal strength. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think that's what we're talking about, our internal strength. And certainly Sword and Sandal Cinema does much to support that strength and engender that strength. And Mike Dayton's Qi course is certainly part of that. So, yes, I think it's definitely valuable, and I would recommend it to anyone. So I'm looking forward to that.
I contacted him, by the way. I don't know if he's still alive or if it's just a company now that's reissuing the classes, but I haven't heard back from them yet. And John E. Peterson was on the show. He did a series of books on using no equipment except maybe a pull-up bar and some chairs. And he built a very impressive body doing traditional isometric and isotonic exercises with minimal equipment. I had him on. He's going to be coming on again later on. The Bullworker people and I have been dancing for a couple of years now. They're answering, but we haven't been able to connect yet. So all of those things are somewhere on the horizon.
It's very exciting. It's very exciting, you know, exploring the isotonic, isometric forms of exercise. All of this, for those of us in the thousands, as you've just mentioned, yes, there are thousands who've been influenced by sword and sandal cinema with the image of the classic physique in mind. Classic physique is depicted in Roman and Greek sculpture and architecture. And that's the image. At the end of the day, that's the image that we adhere to. That's the image that we admire. Those of us who grew up with those films. And there's still what brings out the childlike excitement in me is there's still that sense of wonder when we watch these films, and we could, may have seen them 1,000 times, but they still inspire a sense of wonder. And that sense of wonder inspires also a childlike glee, if you will, that, you know what, life is going to be okay. That's what the sword and sandal has done for me and continues to do throughout the rest of my life. I know that'll be a reality.
There's another area where we share a common interest. I'm starting a bunch of activities to tie the mythical with the UFO and ancient alien or ancient astronaut lore. And I'm going to be speaking at the Disclosure Network about it. And here locally at one of my local libraries, I started a few study groups. And people are meeting now. We've been meeting for several months. So I'm starting again the UFO Entity Enigma show, and I'm going to develop a new one about the contactee era.
Oh, I'm
going to be inviting
you.
I'm
very excited to hear that.
I'll be inviting you very soon to join that adventure as well. That's something, and there are plenty of movies about in the sword and sandal genre about like Hercules conquers Atlantis, and there's the one with Reg Park, Hercules against the Moon Men, and there's a lot of hidden mythology in there too, with ancient Greek myths about the moon and so forth. That if you're not familiar with it, it just goes like over your head. But there's all sorts of things going on over there. And I'm also starting an interactive storytelling game. Some people call them role-playing games or fantasy role-playing games. That's going to take place in the peplum type of world or ancient Greece and the world of the gods as which presented in the peplums. So that's something else I've under development. That'll be available free on Facebook. For anybody who wants to play along with that. So there's a lot of interesting stuff coming in the very near future.
Well, what a wonderful way to inspire the mythical spirit in all of us. And you're doing so much to contribute to that and build on that. That's very exciting, and I'm certainly looking forward to all of these activities and hearing about them and learning about them.
And I'm glad to be adventuring with you. I wish you lived closer. I'd love to get together over coffee and talk about these things beyond what we talk about on the air. But that day shall come too. I have no doubts that it will come.
I'm very excited the day that we can meet. My life is a little restricted now because of what I do. You know, I'm involved in senior care. And that's a 7-day-a-week, 24-hour-a-day job. I'm looking forward to the day when we can meet, and I would be certainly excited to do that.
And I'm grateful to the virtual world because it allowed us to connect and allowed us to get to know each other, and it allowed us to do things like these podcasts together.
Well, one of the great events in my life was connecting with you. Karen, my dear friend Karen, would often say to me, I wish you could meet someone who loved these films as much as you do. This was back just before the DVD era, if you will. And she would often say to me, I wish you could meet someone that shared these interests. And then somehow we connected. I don't know how that happened exactly now, but it's one of the great, maybe the great joy of my life. So I'm very appreciative for our communication and our friendship.
Ditto here, and we've run out of time, unfortunately. How can people get in contact with you?
Well, they can write to me at the Michael Del Rossi Post Office Box, 129 Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006. And I have a Creative Health Manual, which is an excellent holistic resource, if you will. We cover everything for herbs, vitamins, minerals, diets that we personally recommend at this juncture. And it's a $3 donation. Along with that, we also have a Wisdom of the Hemispheres laminated chart, which explains the holistic mind and the research we've done on it. I think is very interesting. And I also do prayer work. I like the written word, so anyone can write their prayer requests to me at that, and I will pray over them, give them a white light, pray over them with the white light, which is responsible for all things, and write them back. So it's Michael Del Rossi, Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey. Please don't hesitate to send me your prayer requests. We've been doing this a lot of years, and we know our energy will be helpful.
And that's another adventure we can go on together at a later time, because I do prayer work as well. So, Michael, thank you so very much. Always a pleasure, always an honor. And I'm looking forward to our next conversation, whether it be on or off the air.
The same here, my friend. God bless you.
And you as well. Take care, my friend.
Thank you.
And I wish we had more time tonight. I always love getting into conversations with our guests on this show. We share a passion for sword and sandal cinema, and yet we have other things that we're mutually interested in, and I'm very happy that we're doing things together in those areas as well. And now onward to Setna Kamwas of Kemet, who will be talking about Clash of the Titans, the original, of course. Greetings and welcome, Kamwas. How are you?
I'm getting ready to fly on Pegasus.
There you go.
Are you ready, Hercules?
I'm ready.
Here we go. I thought I'd put the soundtrack on in the background. It's a very cool soundtrack as well.
Yes, the Clash of the Titans soundtrack was very inspiring. I remember it.
I have a million soundtracks at home. It's one of my favorites. One that people keep trying to buy from me is the original Star Wars, and I have that on vinyl, and also Clash of the Titans and Jaws, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
But
I used to have Star Wars and Clash of the Titans, but they got lost in some of my many moves over the years.
I have everything in a plastic milk crate. It's been there forever. My mother's treasures, however, my sister somehow lost, which is terrible. But I don't want to talk about that.
Okay, very well.
I'm going to get on my Pegasus and fly with our hero, Perseus. Now, you know that this movie comes from a great legendary story about a hero who is the son of, half-brother, Hercules. Perseus, one of Zeus's other offspring, as it were. Perseus, Zeus came to his mother, Danae, in a golden shower, and she never knew what hit her. When she 9 months later, she certainly did. And her father was, I believe it's Aegeus, was furious with her because all of a sudden she's like, Dad, guess what? You're not gaining weight. It's not the pita bread, is it? And she said, no. So because he's disgusted with her, and he also worships Hera and Thetis, sacrifices his daughter by putting her in a coffin, a huge, I guess it was wooden coffin, a painted black, and it has a symbol, the goddess Hera, on top of it. And he throws her into the ocean to Poseidon and Theseus to be destroyed by, hopefully, the Kraken in future. However, that's not what happened. As we know, they take a hand in it. Though, you know, to appease Hera and to appease the others, they throw her into the ocean with her son, and she gives birth, I don't know, on the island. And that's what happens. Zeus puts her on an island. I'm trying to think of the name of the island. I know it's something to do with
I don't remember the name of the island, but she landed with a fisherman who turned out to be the brother of the king. And
right.
She, the attention of the king who desired her.
Right. And after that, when Perseus grows, and if you see the movie, they're using wax figures or clay figures, and Perseus suddenly grows to manhood. And he's, I think, 19 or 20. So the little bump that's a baby suddenly becomes Harry Hamlin. And he's beautiful. In the movie, I think the greatest actor of all time plays Zeus, Sir Laurence Olivier, who I think did a definitive Hamlet. We won't get into that right now. But you also have the gorgeous Claire Bloom playing Hera, Maggie Smith playing Thetis, who's the goddess of the sea. You have Ursula Andress playing Venus, and she, Aphrodite, excuse me, does a gorgeous job because she was quite beautiful. I don't know the name of the woman who played Athena. She's a Greek actress. She's very beautiful. But I think the person that stole the movie from a long point of it was Burgess Meredith, who plays a teacher for Perseus. But Perseus suddenly becomes a man, and he's, you know, all hot and bothered to prove himself. And he lands up on another island. Zeus makes him fall asleep, and he ends up on another island. And on the island is a queen, played by Sean Phillips, who everybody would know as the Bene Gesserit mother in Dune, the queen, or I should say high priestess. And she's also my favorite character in I, Claudius, which is Livia. She's a very good at playing very bad people. She is, and she's an amazing actress. I saw her on Broadway as Marlene Dietrich. And if you look twice, you'd swear that had been Marlene Dietrich. She was that good. But she has a gorgeous daughter. And her daughter's name is Andromeda. Same familiar? And she brags that Andromeda is the most beautiful woman or creature in all of the universe. And in the temple of Thetis, Andromeda is told by her mother, Cassiopeia, and to all the people that she's more beautiful even than the goddess Thetis. Well, the goddess has had enough. She blows the head grind, and the head falls off the statue. She blew her head off. She's furious. And she says that in 30 days, when the moon rises again, that Andromeda must be sacrificed to Thetis. On the altar, on this huge chain rock altar, and sacrificed to the Kraken, who is, after all, the creature owned by Poseidon, and is then released by Poseidon to release the Kraken, or he says. Well, in the meantime, Perseus has also discovered how beautiful Andromeda is, and he sees what happens. Throughout the whole time of the time that Andromeda is there, Andromeda has dreams. She was in love with a guy who at one time was an amazing looking god, the son of Thetis, and he annoyed Zeus, and Zeus turned him into this horrible creature, and so he's no longer there. He's no longer engaged to Andromeda. And he becomes a horrible fiend. But in the meantime, Andromeda dreams every night of a way to break the spell. And in order to do that, She is taken. I think his name is Celebos.
Celebos, yes.
Celebos, the demon. He's half god and half basically reptile. He's hideous looking. Very well done, of course, a Ray Harryhausen masterpiece. The entire movie is a Ray Harryhausen masterpiece. I believe he won an Academy Award for this. Well, like everything else he did, he was the stop-action god of the universe. I'm sure he's smiling down on what I just said just now. And
I met him, and that clip is still on YouTube of my interview of him. It was great to actually meet him. He's somebody that I admired greatly, and he brought the mythology to life through a stop-motion animation. And,
he
was very pleasant, and I asked him if he had to do it all over again, what would he do differently? And he said he'd learn how to manage his money better. That's true for most of us that can say that. So it was good to find the humanity in him as well, this legendary figure. And he, after the interview, he left that day. He was flown to George Lucas's Skywalker Ranch. So I caught him
just in time.
Cool. I was really happy. He was there when I made my first movie, my first short that was shown at a film festival. And so that was very special, too, that Ray Harryhausen was there.
Did he like it?
We didn't really talk that much. He didn't see it. Actually, he didn't see it because he left for the Skywalker Ranch. We made a film of us. We were invited to come to the Lake Placid Film Festival. And then it was after September 11th, and everything had kind of collapsed. So I got this invitation out of the blue. Most of my crew from my TV show had left, so I had to gather new people. We went up there to Lake Placid, and I made it a goal to make a short movie of us going to Lake Placid and show it during the film festival at Lake Placid, and we're able to meet that goal. None of us slept for days making this short movie, and Lloyd Kaufman from Troma showed it at the film festival.
I knew them. I was supposed to be working on one of the Toxic Avenger films, and what happened was they ran out of money, so they never made the film, and I was very upset. I don't even know if they're still around anymore, but that was in the 80s, and that was really fun. He liked, I had a tree creature I made out of clay, and he saw it, and he said, can you make that big? And I said, sure. So I was going to do that, and there were other monsters that he liked that I made that he wanted us to use, but he couldn't get the funding for that film. You know, they were on a very short budget.
Yes.
Trauma films, I think if they were $100,000, it was a lot, and nobody got really paid well.
It was an opportunity, and I was in one of the movies, and they cut me out of it because they got new people funding the movie, so all my parts got cut out of it. It was Tales from the Crapper, and I was supposed to be in Poltergeist, but I just moved to Pennsylvania, and there was no way I could manage my work at the time. I was working in human services vocational rehabilitation, and I was traveling to Pennsylvania, and there was no way I could have fit in time to be in a trauma movie. Lloyd was on my show numerous times. He was in my movie. Kabuki Man and the Toxic Avenger were on my show in the movie. So I spent many years interacting with them when I lived in New York.
Well, I felt bad that the movie lost their budget at that. That was 1980. I'm going to say 6 or 7. And I had just done all these beautiful, beautiful clay characters. And they were very, very pleased with them. You know, I work very well in Sculpey. In fact, I'm working on a statue of you right now in Sculpey.
Really?
That I'm going to...
I'm honored.
Well, you know, I make spirit statues, which are called Ushabtis. It looks like a mummy-formed body, but it looks like the real person. I can show you examples at another time. But they're very popular because they can help you put your energy out into the universe but you're doing something else. It's kind of like, you know, having five or six of you running around.
That'd be a good thing.
Well, yeah. You know, it's like you ever wish you were in three places at once. Well, this way, spiritually, you put enough energy in there, and you actually can. I have people that have sworn that some of the people I've worked with have been on bi-locations, including myself. I was seen by my best friend's sister walking through their front gate when I was in Florida, and that was in Long Island, in Uniondale. So they were like, what do you mean you're not home? I said, well, I'm with my grandparents in Stuart, Florida. And my friend's sister, Lisa, insisted that, no, Michael, you were here about an hour ago. And it was funny because I was thinking about them, and I sent the energy, which I actually manifested. And that's really cool.
That is cool.
And that was 1981 or earlier. No, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. 1979 or so, I was still in Long Island, and I'd it was before my grandfather died. And then, you know, they were like, what do you mean you're at your grandfather's place in Florida? No. And other people had seen me in other situations when I was at Nassau Community College. So I'm able to do that by location and transmute spirit very easily. And I'm also able to help people by using my cobalt crystals that way, sending the energy forward. You weren't feeling well, or Athena wasn't, a few months ago. And when you all got sick with COVID, and I sent the energy there to you all, and I know you felt it. I know you did. And then I know I helped you recover.
Well, thank you.
But meanwhile, to our hero. So he finds Andromeda gorgeous, and he sneaks up on her. In the meantime, Zeus gave him three, but when he was working with Burgess Meredith, when he's working with his teacher, Zeus decided that the three goddesses, Athena, Venus, and I believe the other one was Athena, Venus, Aphrodite, and the other one was Thetis? No, I don't think it was Thetis. Oh, Hera. They were all to make weapons and protection and would help protect while he was on his journeys. Athena made him, what else would she do? Athena made him a helmet. No, it wasn't Athena. It was, I believe that was Hera made him a helmet. And Aphrodite made him a sword, a magic with Hephaestus, her boyfriend. A wonderful, wonderful sword that would help him. He had a shield, a helmet, a sword, and fourth thing, which was Bubo from Athena.
Yes.
Zeus wanted her to give him her owl, and she would not do that. Remember, and she's caressing the owl, and the owl's kind of catching up to her. Well, so what happens is he again also talks to Hephaestus, Vulcan, or Hephaestus, same god, and they make a clockwork owl for him, which is a Ray Harryhausen masterpiece. It's one of the most beautiful things he ever created. I love that owl. So all these things appear, and Burgess Meredith says, oh, my God, these are gifts from the gods. So the thing is that the there's also a cloak, a fabulous cloak, and the cloak makes Perseus invisible, remember?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is he falls in love with Andromeda, and there's a million suitors for Andromeda. And if you don't guess the riddle that she gets every single night from Calebos, you get burned at the stake, which is really not fun. And he sees this happening, so he cheats. Her spirit goes into a cage, and a not very convincing-looking vulture comes. I don't like that. That's the one thing Ray Harryhausen didn't do well, was that vulture. And the vulture flies and picks up the cat, the thing, the cage, and it ends in a weird swamp place where Calebos is the king now. And he tells her on a parchment, he kills like a crow, uses the claw and the blood to write something. And every single night, he's given a new clue. And if you don't answer right, you're burned at the stake. So what happens is, somehow along the line, Perseus takes his magic cape and he sees what she's doing. And, you know, she's told. And he gets into the swamp. And somehow along the line, Calidos finds Perseus and there's a fight. And Perseus cuts off Calidos' hand. And on the hand is what she's going to say next. And she comes and there's a whole speech there about, I see two moons enclosed in gold, on and on and on. And the only part, can you tell me what that is? And Perseus says, I know what it is. It is the ring from the god, from Calidos. And here it is on his claw hand and throws it down. Again, it's a Ray Harryhausen claw. And she says, that's correct. And they're going to he's going to marry her. There's a whole ritual, remember? And because at that point, Cassiopeia makes the bragging that I said she did before, she should be sacrificed. So Perseus has to figure out, how the hell am I going to save her? And there are clues and all sorts of things happen. He runs into an augura who tells him where to find the answer. And he runs into the Stygian witches who have one eye between three of them. And that's, aren't they in other myths as well?
Yes, they are. The three sisters, they share an eye and a tooth.
Well, here. So the most famous of all three of them is Flora Robeson. Flora Robeson has a place in my heart because she played Potestatita in Caesar and Cleopatra with Vivian Leigh and Claude Rains. She always manages to play ugly, ugly characters. Except if in The Bluebird, she plays Meetal, which is a beautiful, mischievous cat. And she's much younger. But later on, she plays all these horrible bad characters. She's even one of the witches in Macbeth with Orson Welles. She's quite brilliant, a great actress. But this is the end of her career, and she ends up playing one of the Stygian witches. Most of the people that were watching the movie were quite young, had never heard of Flora Robeson, but I knew her work. So I was like, wow, oh my God, it's Flora Robeson. Amazing. And they're all fighting over the eye, you know, because they want to eat Perseus because he's plump and muscular and handsome, and these witches are cannibals. So somewhere along the line, they've eaten one of his companions. There's a hand comes up through the cauldron, and she smacks it down. Get down there, you know, boil, simmer. Anne Burrell would have said, you know, reduce to simmer. You know, whatever. Take it off the fire so it doesn't boil. And Perseus gets the eye. Bubo grabs the eye from the witches and flies around. Where's the eye? The eye, we got to have the eye, blah, 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 blah. And he says to them, I will tell you where the eye is. I'll give it to you if you tell me how to defeat. And the witches are like, oh, really? Okay. Well, what you've got to do is get the head of Medusa and show that to the Kraken, and that will stop him. And they said, that's not going to be easy. You've got to get to the island where she is, and she could kill you. So once again, a wonderful Ray Harryhausen character. My favorite of all his ever creatures was the Medusa. I think she's unbelievably incredible. I had a miniature that I made. It was a model. I guess I got some model store years ago. And it was incredible. Unfortunately, when I was moving, I think somebody stole it. One of the movers stole it. I painted it exactly like the real.
Like the movie,
Oh, my God, she was amazing. I can reproduce her. I sculpt, as you know. So I could reproduce it myself. Anyway, long girl story short, Perseus gets on the island, and of course, five or six of his companions are, what Medusa does worse, which is get people stoned, literally. I mean, you know, that's where I think the term I was petrified comes from. She wasn't kidding. She, you know, she knew how to really rock your world. So Perseus has the shield. Oh, by the way, Medusa's blood becomes acid and like lava. So Perseus has got his invisible cloak on and his cap And Bubo is annoying the hell out of the Medusa. And she's chasing the guys, and she's chasing Perseus. And he takes his shield, and he puts it so he can, it's mirrored on the inside. And she's, you know, coming toward him. He's throwing rocks and things and she, to draw her attention. And he takes that magical sword that was given him by the goddesses. And as she's nearing with her bow and arrow, he slices her head off. And there's a whole scene where she screams and her tail goes flying all over the place. And she falls down dead. And then he, not looking at her, grabs his beautiful red cape, her head in it, because you can't. And then from the neck, if you remember, spews his horrible acidy blood, and his magical, one of his tools, one of his toys, the magical shield melts. Remember? And he then can go, and he gets somewhere along the line, and I'm forgetting where, they also told him to find Pegasus. And he goes to the well of the souls, and this is where this horse, the winged horse, throws up. Another Ray Harryhauser masterpiece.
Uh-huh.
I always thought the wings were too short, but, you know, that's artistic life.
Before you proceed, just to let you know, we have around 3 minutes left. So unless you want to be a to be continued, we have to wrap up.
Yeah, we all know that all's well that ends well. The boy doesn't get the girl. He gets something else. And, you know, the Kraken is defeated, blah, 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 blah. And everybody lives happily ever after. We've all seen the movie 8 million times. We all love it. And, you know, it's one of my favorites because it's become a real cult classic, hasn't it?
And mythologically, Perseus was the Hercules mythology's grandfather. Pegasus is actually a son of Medusa because her blood fell into the sea when Perseus was flying over the sea. And out of the mixture of the blood of Medusa and the sea, came Pegasus and also Chrysaor, the Golden Warrior, who I don't think was in the movie, that particular movie. But he was the source of many myths about Geryon and so forth.
That her blood gave birth also to the Hydra later on. And that's another story for another hero.
Another day. Well, thank
Meanwhile,
you. Very entertaining retelling of Clash of the Titans, and I enjoyed it a great deal. Now, as you know, our Sword and Sandal Cinema shows are tied to our Herculean Physique shows and our Quest for Optimal Wellness in the Age of Heroes, and you had indicated that you were willing to share your journey to wellness. Are you still interested in doing that?
Of course. And I did have for a very long time, I almost died from an autoimmune condition called pemphigus vulgaris, which makes you look more awful than the Medusa. I look like a walking lasagna with bloody, healthy things. And I learned how to overcome that. My dermatologists are in shock. I do not have that disease, that condition in my body anymore.
So we'll discover how you did that. We have a minute left. How can people contact you, O Setna?
Well, my dear hero, you can contact me at mkwaterman@icloud.com. You can reach me on my phone if you wish to text or call, 516-650-3691. And, yeah, that's a Long Island number, but I would not give it up. I have too many customers that knew that number. You can reach me at michaelkwaterman@facebook.com. You can reach me on Instagram, I think by the same way, or Twitter, or indeed if you wish, LinkedIn if you wish. I am also available, obviously, with you, Hercules. And I'm, as we know, getting ready to retire. So I'll have much more time to work with all of you, and I'm very excited about this.
Me too, and we have plenty of adventures planned in the days ahead. Thank you so very much, Setna. Thank you, Michael. Michael's still on the line with us as well. And thanks to our wonderful audience. Whether you clicked on the link and found yourself, whether you called in and you're waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to join us later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody, and thanks, guys.
Good night, Hercules. Good night, everybody. Uncle Jot Zanev. Good night.